was then.
The decision was made.
There is a struggle between common men
and others. I forget the rest.
Go on, big wheel. Fuck.
Okay. All right. Got to Buford. Stepped off that plane with 35 Marines. Pulled up to the runway. The captain asked me, "Where are you going, Chief?" I told him, Albuquerque, New Mexico, my home. He said, "The only plane leaving is toward Savannah, Georgia." The 35 Marines just followed orders and packed their gear. I took my grip bag, went down, bought myself a bus ticket. Stood out of town for a while, trying to get a ride into town. Had paid 20 cents for a Dixie cab. And the afternoon was golden and cold. So a Marine captain came by. "Where are you going, son?" I said, "Well, I was going home." Tears in my eyes. He said, "There's a chopper leaving towards Savannah. You want to catch him?" He was a kind of man. So I turned back into the base. And his name was Captain Andrews that I had to call up. So I called up Captain Andrews, went and took my bags over to the counter, and he said, "A man said that I could catch a ride with you." I said, yeah, there's a plane leaving in 15 minutes if you want to catch it. I said, okay. From Newport to Savannah. I was going to Atlanta. Not even the right direction. So, got on that helicopter. Couple crazy guys. One of them was in training for Vietnam, and the other was a guy that just got out from the Those savannas look so pretty in south of Buford. You could see that land, the lay of that land. How the Indians were willing to die for them during the removal. This is not to disparage Andrew Jackson and the United States. Helicopter, you know, I was talking to this one guy on a helicopter, and he said, "This line is pretty."
Don't get this.
You ever been down, you know, right in that Savannah area where the river's empty into the ocean? That's going to be yours, and you better do things with it when I leave. Otherwise, I want to come back to St. Louis and whip your butt.
On a good day.
On a good day?
On a good day.
Wednesday or Thursday?
I'll see you cook. Do your best. I'll be watching. So I will never want to hurt you, man. You have me at a disadvantage.
I don't care to know ID.
I know who you are. I don't care no ID either. You know?
No, I do now. I didn't use to.
There are a lot of people that have worked very hard to bring all these people together from New York, from Albuquerque, from Kirksville, Missouri, and out here by University City. And I'm very pleased that you've got us all here. These are different kinds of Indian tribes, people's experience, but I hope you can hear from Simon's prayer the ways in which, one of the ways in which for the people who have background with Indian things, there's one way that's among all of them, which is to regard the place where we are as not entirely separate from, different from, but alive and with us. And we're responsible for that, and ourselves and each other, as well as just one or a few small people. Simon talks about grandfathers and grandmothers. The Indians, that's very special, I think, for the rest of us it is too, if you think about it. The Indian people have kept a lot of the ways because the grandmothers and grandfathers don't forget quite as fast as some of us would if we didn't have them around. Well, I can talk a little bit about the different people here. I just want to introduce Jim Barnes and I are going to read first, and then Maurice Kinney. And then Simon, we'll read last. Jim Barnes, who's going to read here, is Choctaw and Anglo descent from down Oklahoma. And he took his college work up at Arkansas, University of Arkansas. And he has worked in the comparative literature. He teaches up at Kirksville at Northeast Missouri State now. Jim's poetry has appeared in a lot of magazines. There's a fine anthology called Carriers of the Dream Wheel. It's got quite a bit of Jim's work in it. And he has got a new book that's coming out from University of Illinois Press. They just accepted it, a book of his poems. It's not out quite in time for this, but Jim says it'll be out in 1982, he hopes. So have another Duff's reading at some point when that comes out, I hope. So Jim will be reading. Maurice is from upstate New York, where his father was in the Mohawk tribe. And Maurice has a fine journal called Contact, too, which he edits, and there's some copies of that over there. Also, Maurice helps to run a press, a Strawberry Press, and there are some beautiful examples of the poems that come out of that over here. He's especially interested in the American Indian, Native American. I'm going to use both those title terms because for some of you who are not in the things as much, American Indian would be the thing you're used to, trying to speak English as nearly, what do you say, the center of the ordinary as possible here. So Maurice comes from that, and he has some fine books besides the Contact 2 magazine and besides the Strawberry Press. He has some books of his own here, the Northport Home and Dancing Black Strong People. And you've seen his work, and especially if you've heard him, you know how well he gets that across when he reads it. And then Simon, who just spoke with us, for us, is from Acomac Pueblo. Now, Simon can tell you how to say ah-ku, which I can't, because he has the language there. But the people are ah-ku, ah-ku-me. The way to pronounce that, he can tell you. That's extremely old. It's said to be the oldest inhabited city, town in this continent. Oldest continuously inhabited one. Been there an awful long time. And if you've read his books, A Good Journey, this last one, Fight Back, you'll find over there, you know what a fine, wonderful poet he is. I would rather read his things than mine if I wanted to get across to you. But we're expected, each of us, to read some of our own things to do this. And I thought, Jim, I would read a couple short things and then kind of turn it over here. I usually read, whenever I read, for my first thing, a poem of mine called The Coyote. And I read it because it was where I got started, really. But it's about getting started for me. Coyote is very important for Indian people, a lot of the places around. For me, a coyote was an animal for a long time. It was an animal that we had in Osage County Wolf Hunters Association to hunt. But it gave me a voice, and I know I don't sound much like a coyote. It's much prettier, if you've ever heard one, and much scarier, and a lot of things that I'm not. But it gave me a voice because when I was trying once, I have a hearing problem, and once when I was living up in Amherst in Massachusetts, in the house where Emily Dickinson's poems were left, a lot of them in the camper chest there. I was up under the roof and it started to rain in the early morning and I heard some of it. And I was thinking, since my ears were going down, how I wouldn't be able to hear that so well, and who knows how long. And it's a beautiful sound, especially with the roof and if you're close to it. And so I was thinking about that, and then I was thinking how another time with the thunder and the lightning and the rain like that, when I was maybe 15 or so, we'd been hiking up in some woods in the Osage Hills near us, and there were big rocks there, and underneath the coyote dens. Some people had set traps back in there too, so you had to watch yourself if you went in there. Didn't know whether the coyote was going to get you or the trap would. But we went in there to get out of the rain, so I was thinking of that. Then I was thinking, boy, the way they hear that must be something, because they've got beautiful voices, and they sing to each other. And you imagine how they would hear that rain kind of when it was coming from a distance off there. So I was thinking about the way that rain came in on it. So I thought to write on this, and I got, I can't remember whether I got 13 lines or 15 lines, but I either chopped off one or added one. I got a sonnet out of it. And it's a sonnet without rhyme. It's a sonnet of 14 lines with a turn in the middle. It's the coyote talking. There was a little rill of water near the dam that showed a trickle all the dry summer when I was born. One night in late August it rained. Thunder waked us. Drops came crashing down in dust on still blackjack leaves, on lightened rocks. And the rain came in a pelting rush down over the hill. The wind blew wet into the cave. I heard the sounds of leaf drift, wet rustle of branches in gusts of wind. And then the wet rill's tune changed. I heard a rock drop and set new ripples gurgling in a lower key. Where the new ripples were, I drank next morning. Fresh, muddy water that set my teeth on edge. I thought how delicate that rock's poise was. The storm made music when it changed my world. So I think of that as waking me up. My Osage name, Nambiwadi, means fear-inspiring, which amuses Amerindians considerably. I'm not very fear-inspiring, but I'm named for a thunder fear. I didn't think about that when I wrote the poem, but now I think when I put it first in a book, which is this Bonga Word Answers volume, that's coming. When I put it first in a book, it tells how my voice came, in, on a page anyway. I think of it as being waked up that way. I thought I would read one more short thing. Yeah, can you hear?
Can you do Uncle Gus?
Which one?
Uncle Gus. Uncle Gus.
Uncle Gus. I'd like to, it's kind of long, Simon. This is called Ponca Word Answers itself. Simon likes this. Jim, I'll just do this by request here, Simon. I like it because Uncle Gus was a favorite uncle. What's that?
Yeah.
I don't hear so well, Simon. If I don't respond to what you say,
it's okay.
If I don't respond to what you say, is that, you know, deafness, it gets me. But I could read this, maybe like, this is called Ponca Word Answers. It comes out of Wounded Knee, a lot of other things. I was up there for a little bit. And in the next year, my Uncle Gus died. He was a great war dancer. He actually introduced war dancing, the fancy war dance, down that part of Oklahoma. And he was champion for, see, they used to have these contests at the different powwows. And he'd go from one to the other.
You don't have to tell
him. Yeah, okay. That's a good point. Okay, when Uncle Gus came to visit his nephew Buck's new wife, she was so polite and nice, he really liked her very much, but she talked directly to him. And that's not right in Ponca ways. Still, he just ignored her efforts at conversation or spoke to Buck for her to overhear. Until one day with Buck at work, she asked Uncle Gus to carry groceries into the house, and that was when he quietly left Kansas City. Although she could never figure out, until finally Aunt Jewel had to explain. I'll explain real fast. There are certain relationships. There's a teasing uncle. There are relationships of different kinds.
Yes, really.
But that's it. Okay, I'll read it. All right. This is a different one. He was the greatest of Ponca dancers. Yet when he came to see some of my white uncles and they went off to drink, how come I never understood he was a champion but saw a heavy-bellied, quick-talking man that kids swarmed round, full of jokes and laughter. Never seemed to brawl or argue. Till at the Osage dances one June, when he was 60-something, I saw him dance. And everybody got quiet, except to whisper, the champion. And here came Uncle Gus, pot-bellied but quick-footed. He went twirling and drifting, stomping with a hawk wing of Hubbard, and leaping, spinning, light as a leaf in a whirlwind, ankle bells shrilling, dancing the spirit's dance in a strange land where he had gone and fasted and found his vision to lead his people, but had nowhere to lead them except into white ways. So here he danced in Wakonda's circle, drum at the center, the old songs being sent up in the brilliant bug-filled light among bleachers and tourists and the grave, merry faces, Osage and Ponca, Oto and Delaware, Pawpaw and Omaha, Pawnee, Comanche and Kaw. They saw what he was doing and how he did it well, even when to the white eyes watching, he was an old Indian slowing down, and between dances going to have another slug of hell, maybe Old Pro or even Canadian Club, good enough for a champion. A year after Wounded Knee, it was his memorial feast they held down in Ponca City in the auditorium. We had to drive around to find it, White Eagle grounds being used for another Ponca funeral then. And I drove into it with his sons and daughters, the sons and daughters of his sister Jewel, all strong in aim, and some just back from a confrontation down in Pawnee, trying to keep some AIM supporters from being evicted out of their own houses. I drove with my cousins, Carter and Craig, Dwayne and Serena. None of them underground yet from Wounded Knee, nor the helicopters sweeping the Oki Hills once more for them, as they would be next year. As back in the 30s, the Marshals and V-8 Fords had swept the back roads, hunting their dad, Uncle Woody, when he was hiding out down by Buck Creek on bootlegging charges, catching catfish, but letting the big bass get away. Jesus. Think of that Gatsby bunch in the 30s, making bootleg stuff up in Canada, and running it down to Boston, making their family fortune so big. Well, Uncle Woody was facing jail for the same white lightning. And think how in the 1970s those same Gatsbys had got so rich they'd be marrying off into some British title family. About the time when Uncle Woody was thumbing his rides along the roads, this time from California eastward, to join his sons at Wounded Knee. But that's American history for you. And here on the way to Uncle Gus's memorial feast, we weren't in trouble, just driving all crowded up in my old dart, with Stephanie from Third Mesa, Mickey from Pine Ridge, Geronimo, Big Jim Jump, Marianne teaching us Cherokee, all of us singing 49 songs on our way to the feast. I saw go up to Porcupine. Indians dance in the summertime. We will dance the 49. We will have a damn good time. Hey, yeah, yeah, yo. I could never get the right number of yo's and hey's and drive straights, too. Besides, that damn state patrolman was tailgating us, just waiting for a traffic violation. Nail these militant Indians good. But we put the wine in our trunk so they couldn't possibly get us for driving with open bottle. Still, it was getting dark. And I, of course, was scared shitless, wondering if we'd get shot by troopers or by FBI, or maybe by some skins that had been lied to or bought or blackmailed. But Carter, Craig, and Buck were as cool as a hawk looking down from riding the wind where blue jays are calling its names. Hey, Mike, Buck said, every time I see you, somebody getting ready to shoot us out of Sunset Lake in 52, up at Wounded Knee last year, and out here in Ponca country, why don't you ever come see us when things are peaceful so we can talk about old times? Oh, shit, Buck, I said. Busting the trooper in the rearview mirror. I only hope we live to talk when these times are old. But near the auditorium, the trooper turned off, and we all pulled in safe. We piled out, went into Uncle Gus's feast, where all the Ponca and Osage women had fixed the fried bread, boiled beef. Sure tastes like slow elk, we said. A lot of fruit, jello and all, and we ate until our bellies were fuller than sand of sleigh. They brought the Osage drum out of mourning to honor Uncle Gus. And the Osage war dancers had come to dance for him. Then when the Ponca singers sang the family song, his nephews and nieces danced round, tall and straight and proud. It was a good time there. And we gave all that we could away. Blankets and shawls and canned hams, even the big box of groceries won the drawing we gave away. Then the trouble broke out and Buck's woman got mad, his flirt with somebody else. She took his gun and hid it. But she came and told me where it was, and we got it back. Nobody got shot or busted that night. That toward the end of the dancing, an old cowboy wandered over from to where I stood behind the bleachers. He watched the war dancers a while, and he said to me offhand, they're good. They will never be as good as Gus McDonald. I told Carter what he'd said, and we sat later back in the corner, near closing time in the Ponca City bar, watched the door and wondered if it was sober enough to stay on the right side back to Stillwater that night. How about that? Carter said quietly. Uncle Gus was the best, all right. Might they'll nail me sometime or another for wounded knee. I know it. I've prepared long since. But I'm back with my people now. Well, they nailed him next year, all right. They caught him in Chicago, finally. We were glad when we heard he hadn't been murdered. Even glad when we heard he'd serve his 3 years in a federal pen. We laughed about his being in Indiana. We were kind of surprised when they shifted him over to Springfield, Mo. And, of course, it was not too bad that he got 3 years for allegedly disarming a postal inspector inside Wounded Knee. Neither snow nor sleet nor Ponca warriors should stay the appointed rounds of those who bring junk mail to advertise how to become Horatio Alger on the Pine Ridge Reservation land. Shongeska, that was Uncle Gus's name. His niece Serena put it on her Indian craft shop, run by her and her husband for as long as people will buy, and run by God of the people, by the people, and for the people, who shall not perish from the earth. Not even if they have to use such European words as these to keep the Ponca ways together. Not being much of a warrior myself, cousins, Aunt Jewel, I set down this winter camp for kind of memorial song to Shongeska, one of the greatest of Ponca dances, to dance once more. We know that even where Poncas are in prison, the songs are with them. How can the bar stop singing inside their head? For those who saw him dance and learned from him the way, he's dancing still. Come to White Eagle in the summertime. Indians dance in summertime. He's back with his people now. Okay. I'm going to see if Jim will read now for us. Jim, I don't know whether to call you an Okie or not, because that's fighting words unless you're another one.
Might as well. Thanks, Okie.
Hello, Torch and Chippewa. That's Salah in French. Or the gates in German. Hello, I thought I'd start off tonight with a bar poem. I'm born and raised in eastern Oklahoma. By the time I wasn't on top of Winding Stair Mountain, I was in Folsom Creek Valley. Most of the time I was on top of Winding Stair with beer joint. Drinking 3-2, getting drunk as a skunk after about 18 beers, you know how it is. The poem is called Breaking 3-2 at Mountaintop Tavern. This bar has always been somebody's home away from home. A place a man could tell a lie and laugh, or drink himself into a sky wide as prairie as he'd like to ride. Used to be, I should have said, the owner's dead. Likewise, the lie and laugh. The beer reeks warm. No dancing, no gambling on pool, no loving. The sky cuts cold against the cracking panes. One door shattered above the knob is wedged tight by a rusty army knife. A half-breed Choctaw hums to his hungry heart. He wants his blood to feel fast, the black and silver hanging at his waist, the wings upon his boots. We keep our strangers' talk out of his soul. The sun's half down, and there are vultures in the sky a man has yet to count before the sliding shadows cross his eyes and fade. The half-breed knows and takes his leave before his closing note, before his silence drives him deaf. Black against the approaching night, he lifts a finger hard against the setting sun. I may have it all in. appreciate it, but it's not necessary because I'm going to be doing something a bit more spiritual. This is the sword of Icyon. Icyon was born to Bulma. Of course, you know, you don't give away your real name. Born to Bulma, died March 11, 1927. He was a Kyle Boya, the later Army Scout under General Scott in Kuwait. No relation. He was keeper of one of the channel of great Kyle of sacred medicine. This is one of the names in the poem, just briefly. Mamanti, Satanta, Ipago, Bulma, Teneangote, Kicking Bird. These were Kiowa chiefs and medicine men. And in the days of many horses, the Kiowas and the Comanches, Rainy Mountain in southwestern Oklahoma and Rainy Mountain Creek were sacred places, favorite camping grounds. This is the song of Icyon in old age. I have watched the changeless mountains receive the sun. I have seen the prairies black with the trampling buffalo. I have heard the wild dark cries in winter's hungry wind. I have tasted the sweet and flowing water of the Quahada Plains. These things I have done, and I am glad to be a man. I have counted the ageless stars and the moon of falling leaves. I have sought in troubled dreams the other side of the sky. I have lived to see the prophecies of Mamanti come to pass. I have known the hot anger of Satanta and Gipago. I have ridden to the moon of going geese with Teneangote, and my heart rides on to Rainy Mountain. My heart rides on. I have watched the changing prairies receive the sun, and I remember plains where grass was tall as man. I, Tabunma, have lived the old ways and the new, the loneliness of the plains, the boredom of adobe walls. These things I have done, and I am glad to be a man. No more shall I race through the nights of the big leaves moon.